Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Julian Zelizer, who's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. His most recent books include Jimmy Carter, Arsenal of Democracy, The Presidency of George W. Bush, and his latest is Governing America, The Revival of Political History. He has an article at CNN, What Happened to Obama's Promise? Welcome to Background Briefing, Julian Zelizer.
Thanks for having me.
And your article indicates that, I guess, a sort of turning point. You're using Jon Stewart's Daily Show to indicate how a very, very effective and powerful spokesperson, I wouldn't say necessarily for Democrats, he's actually, his program is more popular with the younger demographics. That's how they get their news, from a satirical program that satirizes the news. But I take it you feel that the fact that he's expressed disappointment in Obama, that might well signal something restive is going on, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's many Democrats or supporters of President Obama who, you know, don't believe that a lot of the scandal discussion going on equal Watergate. But I think there's a level of frustration that this taps into, that the president has basically, you know, practiced politics that is more ordinary or more normal than many were hoping for when he came into office. And I think Stewart expressed a little of this sentiment in one of his clips where, you know, he's showing pictures of Bill O'Reilly launching attacks on the president, you know, based on things that are far from fact, and then playing the IRS story and just expressing some frustration with what's happened to this president.
Well, of course, the president recently did, I mean, he's been criticized, of course, that instead of being the transformational president that his rhetoric in 2008 suggested he would be, he's become a transactional president. But as you point out in your article at CNN, What Happened to Obama's Promise, Julian Zelizer, is that, you know, he essentially inherited a mess and you know, this is how it is. He, when you inherit all these problems of a government that have not gone away, you know, you're pretty much stuck with trying to deal with what can be done as opposed to what should be done. Am I paraphrasing you correctly?
That's true. You know, he had so many policy problems, like many presidents before him. You know, he made a decision that he's going to focus on issues where he could gain some traction, where he can make some progress, whereas political reform, government reform is extremely difficult, and it often doesn't generate, you know, broad support, but generates a lot of intense opposition. He also has faced a very polarized Congress, and so I think that too has created a disincentive for him to deal with things like campaign finance reform and to instead, you know, try to use the muscle that he has through the existing system rather than try to eliminate it. But it moved him very far away from some of the insights he started with about how our political system works and the kinds of outcomes it inevitably leads to.
Well, I suppose if you needed an example of that argument, Julian Zelizer, there's nothing more, I think, accurate an example than what just happened with gun control. The president clearly, and the Democrats obviously didn't want to touch gun control. They thought it was a losing proposition. But the president was so, I believe, personally outraged by what happened in Newtown, Connecticut, with their school children, young school children being massacred, as was obviously a lot of Americans as well. And against all political advice, he weighed in and tried to do something. And guess what? He failed.
Right. But there he faced two of the issues he campaigned on, one, filibusters and the need to reform the filibuster system, and two, campaign finance and the power of interest groups. And when he decided to go out on a limb and take on this issue, both of those problems came back to haunt him, two problems he's essentially ignored and in some ways with campaign finance exacerbated since becoming president. You know, the gun rights movement with all its various interest groups mounted a very powerful lobby, not just the NRA, but even smaller groups, and it was hard to get a 60-vote majority, supermajority, in the Senate. And so there are the structural problems that he's very aware of, but decided to put on the back burner, came back to haunt him. And, I mean, that's the kind of trade-off that can be very damaging over the long run and leave us in a system that's constantly broken.
And again, I'm speaking with Julian Zelizer, a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He's the author of Governing America, The Revival of Political History, and he has an article at CNN, What Happened to Obama's Promise. So why not take on filibuster reform on day one? I mean, he can do the math.
Yeah, I mean, there were many Democrats who thought that he should and realized the importance of this particular procedure because it creates such an enormous barrier in the Senate to any piece of legislation. The White House gave strong signals to Senate Democrats that that's not something they wanted to do. It would be a heated battle. It would be a tough battle. It could be as tough, if not tougher, than health care. And as we said a few minutes ago, he decided if he's going to do that, he was going to do it on a area of concrete policy. You know, in the first term on health care, second term on fighting these budget battles with the Republicans. But that left that question of filibuster reform when he was at his strongest. That's the moment you can do something like this, get the Senate to move on this. It put it to the side. Many people thought in 2009 that's really what he should have started with. Again, it's hard. In retrospect, he was dealing with a crisis, but it does have big consequences that we don't change the system.
But it has big consequences for him as the head of the executive branch. He's not getting his appointments through. They're not getting passed. He puts up the nominations and they filibuster almost everybody, particularly his judicial nominees. And now we have a judiciary that has enormous numbers of vacancies, including the key court, which is right below the Supreme Court, that he recently tried to get an appointment to. And for the second time, she was turned down, even though she's manifestly qualified. So it seems to me that this has to be very personal for him because, you know, the D.C. Court of Appeals is such a key court. It, not only does it feed the Supreme Court the important cases, it also tends to feed the justices who end up on the Supreme Court. And that court, because of its Republican majority, recently ruled against him in the only recourse he has against the filibuster, which is recess appointments. And now they're trying to make his recess appointments invalid. So what does it take to rile up this president?
Well, I don't know. You know, I think that's where some of the frustration comes in. I think you are correct. One of the problems has come with appointments and an incredibly slow grinding and really dysfunctional appointment process that we have right now, leaving huge gaps in the judiciary and other parts of the executive branch. And two is just with legislation. It's not only bills that fail or don't get the 60 votes needed. It's bills that aren't even tried because the White House just looks at the numbers and says, we'll never get that far. And so that should frustrate a president. It should certainly anger someone who is as, you know, on top of how politics works as this president, but it doesn't. And this has been, you know, part of how we'll remember his presidency. And this has nothing to do with the whole Homeland Security and AP reporters issue, which I think is a different kind of challenge. But certainly on these procedural questions, he has not made them a priority.
So what do you make then, Julian Zelizer, of these reports that Obama has told some of his aides privately that he'd like to go Bullworth? And that's a reference to a movie starring Warren Beatty where a senator sort of goes off the deep end and starts telling the truth and is you know, and goes out of character, or at least in terms of the way Washington is, loses all, throws caution to the wind and starts telling the truth. Do you think there's anything to that?
I don't think it's going to happen, and maybe he talks about it, but I'm not sure exactly what he means by that. If he's talking about Bullworth, wasn't just about his opponents, the senator in that movie. It was about how the whole political system works. So Warren Beatty, you know, plays this character who's brutally honest about campaign finance, who's brutally honest about the power of money in politics. It would be surprising to see President Obama talk about that, but he himself has been, you know, totally invested in that system. He abandoned the Watergate era campaign finance reforms. He accepted the assistance of super PACs in 2012. So maybe he would pull a Bullworth on that front. And I don't know if he's talking about that or he's talking about his opposition, the Republicans. But given who we've had in office these years, I just don't think that's who we're going to see. He's a very cool caution and you know, someone who is not really interested in taking those kinds of risks.
Well, it seems to me, though, that he did have an opportunity not so much to go Bullworth, but at least to both deal with this burgeoning scandal over the IRS and I think redirect it in a way that would have been positive for all Americans, and that is to point out that the reason that the IRS in this Cincinnati office put forth these terms like Tea Party and Patriot was to flag the blizzard of applications that they were getting that were just pouring in because of the Citizens United decision under this rubric called the 501c4, which is supposed to be a tax-exempt instrument used for charity, for social welfare is the actual that's the actual category in the IRS, social welfare. And it seems to me that was a great opportunity to talk about the absurdity of these flagrantly political organizations being getting tax exemption as social welfare charities. You know, instead of doing a kind of mea culpa, which the Republicans, of course, don't care about and not going to work. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. How does it strike you?
It's true. I don't think he wants to do that, though. I mean, the use of these tax-exempt organizations is on both sides of the aisle, and certainly Democrats have benefited as well. So if he wanted to pull a Bullworth, you're right. That was a moment to say, hey, the scandal isn't, you know, flagging the Tea Party in Cincinnati. It's simply the entire system we have that's fueling this kind of campaign finance. But he was notably silent on that. There's been people writing about it. That's not the kind of issue he wants to take on. I think ultimately he has concluded, for whatever reason, he would, you know, rather build a Democratic Party that in his mind can thrive in this campaign finance system rather than to try to transform the campaign finance system, which could bring certain risks to him and to the Democrats. That's at least his calculation.
But on the other phony scandal, the Benghazi one, that was essentially the Fox News have been beating the drum since 9/11 last year when this tragic incident took place that took the lives of four Americans. They've been beating the drum. Recently, ABC ran with a story that was fed to them by the Republicans, and was also fed to the Evening Standard, that turns out in retrospect that there is, whether or not these White House emails were doctored or whether they were selectively edited, apparently there is a real discrepancy in what Jonathan Carl of ABC put out and what later Jake Tapper of CNN put out. The less edited version is much less incriminating than the original one that was leaked. So there it is that they've been able to breathe life into this phony scandal. And Obama is not standing up for the fact that his own White House emails from the National Security Council are being manipulated.
Yes. I there are three issues. There's the IRS issue, which brings with it the questions you raised about tax-exempt organizations and possibly someone who wasn't making smart decisions. There's the Benghazi, which has really been a drummed-up scandal that has not generated much interest other than from the right wing, but it's allowed them to keep something alive, to keep a story in right-wing circles and keep people interested. But really, the kind of press treatment we've seen on it has often been quite stunning. And this final story of the AP, I mean, I don't think that's a scandal so much as a discussion of policy. And I think it fits in general with the kind of national security policies that the administration's embraced, often closer to the previous administration than Obama supporters wanted. And there's no scandal there. I think really what we're seeing is just a revelation of the kind of tactics that are being used. So there's three different issues. I think the politics are all different. But I think regardless of these stories, they've all tapped into some sense that the presidency's lost some of where he started or what he started with.
Well, just in closing, Julian Zelizer, just back to your article at CNN, what happened to Obama's promise and how you mentioned John Stewart on The Daily Show going after the president and expressing a frustration that many liberals and progressives clearly share and have shared for some time in this country. If they don't show up in the midterms, then it's going to be 2010 all over. I mean, what was striking about the midterms, and it apparently is a convention in American politics, that Obama was elected, I think, on about 140 million votes, and he swept in with a trifecta, the House, the Senate, and the White House in 2008. 2 years later, thanks to Karl Rove and a lot of serious money and a lot of good organization, the Republicans were able to take back the House, and only 75 million Americans voted. So there's the discrepancy. Is Obama going to campaign in 2014? Is he going to get these people out? Or are the disillusioned liberals not going to show up, and therefore the Republicans will take the Senate as well as the House?
Well, I think he will campaign, and I think he's well aware after 2010 that he needs as strong a Congress as possible. And so he wants to at least diminish or dampen the kinds of losses that the Democrats face. You know, will Democrats show up? It's hard. You know, it's hard enough in presidential campaigns, but the younger segment, the Obama coalition, doesn't really show up in midterms. They didn't in 2010, and it's going to be very hard to excite them this coming round, especially if there's some tiring that's going on of the administration in general. So it's a big risk, and it could certainly shape the last 2 years where the president will still be facing these kinds of budget battles that we've seen over the past.
Well, Julian Zelizer, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Julian Zelizer, who's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. His most recent books include Jimmy Carter, Arsenal of Democracy, The Presidency of George W. Bush, and his latest book is Governing America, The Revival of Political History. He has an article at CNN, What Happened to Obama's Promise? We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the telecom oligarchs in the new Gilded Age.